the lockdown will lift and you might get your job back, whether you'll get your mental health back or not is another matter. And yet some people are at the opposite end, where they are very grateful for this period. They are benefiting from it in a big way. They are nurturing their physical and mental health. They're meditating. They're working hard on their physical fitness and they're reviving their relationships. And you know, this is what will eventually settle as everybody's new normal is really the question.
You're tuning in to episode 4 of Lockdown Leadership, the support network, where we're talking about mental health realities and initiatives during COVID-19. I'm Shreyasi Singh, founder and CEO of Harappa Education. In this show, I speak to leaders at the helm of steering essential services and critical businesses during our current crisis. In this episode, we feature a conversation with Neha Kirpal, founder of the iconic India Art Fair. Through the time Neha successfully ran the art fair for over a decade, she was featured on Fortune magazine's 40 under 40 list and was the recipient of the President of India's prestigious Nari Shakti Award. For a while now, Neha has been passionate about building services and communities for mental health support, motivated really by her family's deeply personal struggle with schizophrenia. Today, she's a co-founder and chief business officer of Inner Hour, a mental health app that provides self-help tools to 500,000 users across 100 countries. With support in 7+ languages, Inner Hour is democratizing mental health and solving the problem of access. And God knows we need it. If WHO's predictions are correct, around 240 million Indians are suffering from mental illnesses at this very moment. Mental illness is a silent secret with a deafening impact. Enter COVID-19. The pandemic looms so large that it goes without saying that it will affect our psyche in ways we don't even fully understand yet. Inner Hour has made itself count in these tough times. Usage of the app has doubled in the last 40 days. Downloads have gone up by 40 to 45% and therapy sessions have spiked by 60 to 65%. In this episode, we discuss our broken mental health system, the need for community, the role of gender in seeking support, the unfortunate triggers re-emerging in lockdown, and that this crisis does not spell doom and gloom for everyone. There's hope to heal on the other side of it. Tune in.
Welcome to Lockdown Leadership, Neha. It's so fantastic to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Shilpi.
Just for our listeners who have tuned in, Neha Kirpal is the co-founder and chief business officer of Inner Hour, a Mumbai-based mental health platform who's done incredible work through the last 7 weeks during the national lockdown. She's also, I think there is something in her, she creates incredible properties. So she's also the director and the founder of the India Art Fair, which was this incredible property of getting global as well as Indian artists together in a place. Neha, really very, very delighted to have you here. And let's dive straight into really, which is the topic of our podcast and our interest is to see what have businesses done during the lockdown. And I think with at Inner Hour, everything that I've heard about what has happened at Inner Hour has just been fascinating. So tell us first a little bit more about the app and what has changed in the last 7 weeks.
Sure. So, you know, these are very uncertain times. And I think, you know, we're all together in the ambiguity that we face in the new anxiety and challenges that have come up. We're all equally at the deep end. Right. So I think, you know, different constituents, both sort of corporate as well as at an individual level, have attempted many strategies in terms of sort of coping. Right. They're looking at the short term, medium term, and hopefully also the long-term effects of this. Now, where Inner Hour sits in all of this is really as a tool, a service provider platform that is looking to support the emotional and mental health needs of people in this time, right? So whether it is issues to do with sleep, to do with anxiety, to do with any depressive symptoms, relationship issues, COVID-specific programmings on how do we cope with the current crisis and situation, a lot of that is what we are offering support around. A large part of the offering is actually completely digital. So it's anonymous, it's accessible 24 hours, it's frictionless, and it is in the form of a self-help app called The Inner Hour, which was started by my co-founder, Dr. Amit Malik. It was started about three and a half years ago. And over the last few years, there's about 600,000 downloads. There are people on that from 100 different cities across the world. And it's in the top three or four self-help apps in the world. And it ranks among the top apps for anxiety, depression, and self-help. And so if you think about what it is, it's really a sort of an assessment tool to help you figure out where you're at emotionally. And then give you personalized activities to help you get through, right? So it helps you set goals, it tracks your moods, it gives you a bot-based check-in, and it's sort of really a tool that helps you take care of your own mental health. There is also a feature in that to be supported by a coach or a therapist, so somebody who can guide you along. So it's still private, it's still anonymous, it's still not expensive because you're just on a guided coach-based program. But you are able to get some support. And this is really meant to reach out to people in tier two, tier three cities where there aren't necessarily psychiatrists and psychologists available for people seeking help, right? Now, if you think about that extension, you know, today we have about 150 therapists who are empaneled with us, and they are doing counseling, you know, pretty much 12 hours a day in 7 or 8 Indian languages. And the idea is really to be able to reach as many people with the early intervention and support that's possible. So we've had about 7 lakh people taking assessments. There are about 10 to 12,000 people every day on the platform. And what Dr. Amit Malik and our sort of team of psychologists and also scientific advisors have done is really build out, you know, cognitive behavior therapy based, positive psychology based, curative programs, right? That are actually meant to deliver better outcomes for your mental health. So that's the long and short of what the app is and what we're trying to do. We're onboarding a new organization every 48 hours. And the idea really is to be able to make best use of that digital platform and make it available to the widest set of people in these very challenging times.
Great. What has happened in the last 7, you know, you said that you made your program pro bono to several institutions, whether they're hospitals or universities, really to help people navigate these challenging times and take care of themselves as they go through these. What has been the response of this initiative? You know, how many people have come onto the platform, and what has been surprising about the way that they're using it to navigate themselves through this chaos?
There are issues that get highlighted in the wake of a crisis, and mental health is certainly one of those. It's been something that affects at a population level in a very big way. And India has got a third of the world's mental health burden. We've got a third of the world's suicides, addicts, and cases of depression. There's a suicide here every 17 seconds. But at the same time, a lot of these go unrecognized and not talked about and not really addressed or dealt with in the way that they should be, right? So what the COVID crisis has done is that it's brought it to the fore. So there's been a tremendous amount of national media, multi-stakeholder interest, whether it is government or private sector, in trying to, in recognizing that, you know, this is a big problem and people are suffering, the whole work from home situation, the change, the anxieties that come with the layoffs and the financial issues and everything else is resulting in a lot of fear, a lot of paranoia and a lot of anxieties, both at a leadership level and also at an individual level. So people are really coming forward and talking about mental health as a big need to take care of. We've had a couple of state governments also reach out to say, you know, they have telecounseling services, but a digital app can reach, it's completely scalable, right? Because it is not dependent on any human resources for the most part. And we've seen a phenomenal uptake. I mean, just the app usage in the last 40 days has doubled. The app downloads have gone up by 40-45%. The therapy sessions have gone up by 60-65%. So we're seeing a big surge in terms of people actually, you know, there is thankfully a digital solution available that people can reach out to. And at least it, you know, it doesn't solve all your problems. So if you have a serious condition, if you have a sense of self-harm, or if there is a a suicidal tendency or any of those, it's of course not equipped to support at that level where medication might be required or an inpatient admission might be required. But what it can give you is that early intervention and that early understanding of, you know, whether it's sadness or depression and, you know, what you could do about it and just sort of guide you along. So it's not a diagnostic tool. It's more a self-support tool.
And as it turns out, that is the one heartening thing, sort of the silver lining in this dark cloud, is the mainstreaming, as you're saying, of mental health in sort of earlier pockets where there would have been some skepticism both to the construct of mental health as well as to a digital solution to this, right? So in tier two, tier three, you think there has been just larger acceptance of this, and this is likely, in your opinion, to continue beyond the crisis whenever we come out of it?
You know, if this is a recurring lockdown situation, if we're, let's say, 12 to 14, 24 months away from a vaccine, whatever it might be, it's just the beginning of what is going to be a very mainstream, large public health problem that is not just a health problem. It is a civic problem. It is an education problem. It's a developmental problem, right? So it affects every aspect of our life across the population demographics. And that's really how we need to be thinking about it. It's not like a one separate healthcare silo. But yeah, the mainstreaming of it is happening, but then it needs to be backed by a solid investment in mental health, both public and private. And it needs to be backed by very quickly providing services, especially remote access services. So for instance, in India, there's no 24-hour suicide helpline. You know, you can only call in between 9 and 5, or 9 and 2, I think now the timings are, these are the things that we have to really work on. I mean, we have a student death in this country every hour, but we don't have a 24-hour student helpline that is actually functional. And also the quality of people and support that is available on these has to be there needs to be some level of certification, some level of training, some minimum standard that actually endorses that you're capable of handling a chronic case or a suicidal case, because there's a lot of sort of fly-by-night operators who are simply just, taking people from a call center and setting up a mental health helpline today, right? And that can be even more dangerous than not having the solutions.
What is the one thing that you have learned through these last 7 weeks that has been surprising? And it could be in the way that people are using the product or in the kind of issues that have come up that you wouldn't have anticipated.
So we're seeing a lot of reemergence of PTSD. And also, there's been an increase in domestic violence, in domestic abuse, in divorce rates, in just relationship issues. So, people are just not used to being forced to be together in this way and in these circumstances. So that is producing its own dynamics. And these repercussions are for the long term. They are not, tomorrow the lockdown will lift and you might get your job back, but whether you'll get your mental health back or not is another matter. And yet some people are at the opposite end, where they are very grateful for this period. They're very, they are benefiting from it in a big way. They're nurturing their physical and mental health. They're meditating. They're working hard on their physical fitness and they're reviving their relationships and severe ties. And so, they're all kinds. Yeah. And this is what will eventually settle as everybody's new normal is really the question.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. That even if the lockdown ends, the repercussions on a psyche of going through something like this and the continuing real world, in double quotes to say, consequences of this is constantly going to play back on our mental health, right? Whether they're job losses, job anxieties.
It's not a one-off, it'll pass and then everything will go back to normal. It's not, people are realizing that this is not going, what is that new normal? And whether they've negotiated the extent and longevity of it and the depth of it is another matter.
Tell me a little bit about the demographic of your new users, right? Are they young teenagers? Are they, women at home with now everyone coming? Who's coming onto the platform much more right now?
So typically the platform is has had a majority, more women, right? So 60-70% of the people on the platform are women. But that's true globally for self-help and all of that. Women are just better at dealing with their mental health issues, better at asking for help and so on, right? So that's a global statistic. But what we're seeing is an increase in the male population reaching out, right, across cities. And this is data from about 60-70 cities across the country where we're doing therapy work today. At an age level, the population is largely young, right? So the, you know, in their 20s, in their 30s, that's sort of the age profile, also the most digitally savvy and able. And what we're trying to do is, you know, we're trying to sort of start with content in Hindi. We've done a big partnership with Daily Hunt, which is in 16 languages and reaches sort of over 200 million monthly active users. And the idea is that, you know, it's to be able to reach out as far and wide.
Two things about, you know, how the company Inner Hour has managed both this uptick in user base. You know, what is it that, you know, somebody leading a firm with your co-founder, you've had to do with your therapists as well as your teams to enable them to take this on top of their own personal crises, as all of us have? That's one. And is there one particular thing you have changed in the product beyond making many parts of it pro bono through the last 7-8 weeks?
What's changed on the platform is a whole COVID-specific program that has been developed, right, for different audiences. We already had a program for depression and anxiety. We're also building now a program specific for addictions. We're trying to do more and more in terms of engagement, where we have a community section on the app that we have started building out, and we want to try and fast-track that, because then people can support people, you know. So these will be curated, peer-supported communities of people struggling with anxiety or struggling with depression or whatever their issues might be. And it's for people with lived experience, but also for their caregivers, you know. And I come at mental health as a space as a caregiver, right? I've had three decades of extreme psychosis in the family and really looked at it from, you know, how broken the system is and how much that lack of information and awareness matters, right? How many years of your productive life it can take away. And the intergenerational impact of it. And so I'm sort of very focused on the community section. And I think, you know, all credit to the team for how they have, you know, they were always very mission driven. And I think just the culture that Amit has brought in. I mean, it was the same when he was on the board of the Royal College of Psychiatry and the European College Board of Psychiatry, and he was running a large clinical practice in the NHS with 900 clinicians before he moved back to India to set this up. And so I think just the caregiving culture and the extreme ethical practice that he has set and the minimum quality standards that he has set are really a clinical best practice when it comes to teleservices and digital.
What have you learned about both collaboration and communication at a time like this?
I believe that fundamentally people want to collaborate. And, you know, if the right context is created and the right support is built in, then there is a openness to do that, right? Which is amazing, and especially at a time like this when it is a crisis and there's a feeling of solidarity that we're all in this together. People have really sort of extended themselves, and you can see that across the board. I mean, people are doing out of the ordinary things for complete strangers, and the young generation is the one that's changing the mental health demographic. They don't have the layers of sort of shame and stigma as much as the older generations. And so we're going to see, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years, there's going to be a lot of openness about mental health conversations and, you know, people openly talking about, I have bipolar, I'm on antidepressants, I was suicidal, I had an addiction problem, I'm better now, you know, and a lot of those conversations will become as common as I have diabetes and I have thyroid and so on, which is very important, because it's the first step in actually opening things up. So communication and talking about mental health issues is the biggest service that anybody can do in this space, because it is all about empowering communities and people to feel like this can totally be solved. I mean, we're a fully rehabilitated family now. My mother had schizophrenia, went on for 30 years, and today we are fully rehabilitated. She's an active grandparent in my daughter's life, and you know, so I want to be able to carry that message of hope, communicate that message of hope through lived experiences, and share that it's, you know, full rehabilitation and recovery is very possible. And so rather than being scared or being in a shell about mental health conditions, people should actually seek help early and effectively, and be able to communicate about it to their near and dear ones without feeling isolated or alienated. And you will find support, because it's a 1 in 4 problem, you know, mental illness. And so everybody is struggling in some way or the other. And it would be great to not do it privately and in isolation, and just share more openly.
The last 5 minutes really of this conversation, and try and understand you a little bit better. But I think you just have such a fascinating career trajectory, and there's just so much that you have done. Yeah, and putting something together like the India Art Fair, I'm sure there were moments of deep crisis in every edition of the art fair, in putting it together in the days that it went on for. What are your crisis management tips, and who are your crisis role models? Are there people that you've looked up to in the way that they deal with crisis?
I have a lot of mental health issues in our family right from when I was 5 or 7 years old. I've had to deal with crisis, personal crisis, crisis of identity, crisis of choices, family crisis, health, of course, all of that. And so everything else sort of seemed small and irrelevant in the course of that journey, because you just kind of went from one crisis to another. And you kind of go into a survival mode, or you go into you go down, and thankfully with the right support and drive, I was able to try and navigate some of those. Now as I bring that approach into sort of the art world, and now in the world of mental health on the career side, I kind of feel like it's like I said, crisis is an opportunity. So there's a lot of room to grow and learn from those challenging times. I moved on from the art world to mental health after a time when I felt that, I had contributed everything I could to that space, and I had gained everything that I could. And it was time to move on and follow my passion and my true calling in the world of mental health. So it's about growth, and it's about those challenges. And that's kind of what life is, right? Otherwise, it wouldn't be a progression, and we would just be static. So in terms of, I think I look inwards when it comes to crisis management. I draw strength and perspective from sort of a lot of my own life experiences when it comes to crisis. What I could do a lot better with is, and I'm on a constant learning mission, is to try and grow in response to how to deal with those crises on the solutioning side, and try to collaborate with as many people to try and find as much. So like right now with mental health, we have a digital platform, we have some capacity for telecounseling, but we are collaborating with governments, we're collaborating with corporates, because we know that we have to reach out to more people in this crisis to make any significant difference.
At Harappa, we're all about good habits, the cognitive, social and behavioral skills that we teach. We've sort of super categorized them into these habits, sets of things, solve, communicate, collaborate and lead. Actually, there's just so much resonance with, I think, the way that you all think about what you do at Inner Hour, and the way that we think about bringing a lot of positive psychology elements, especially in our lead habit. But what is that one habit, and what is the one habit that you think you have acquired during lockdown?
Gratitude. I think, attitude or gratitude or practice of gratitude. So I was surprised that the biggest sort of takeaway for me has been of just feeling grateful at being able to be relevant in some way through what we have today and what we can do tomorrow. Because ultimately that's kind of what, I think that's what drives a lot of us, right? Yeah. You have certain financial motivations, you have certain needs in life that you have to maintain. That's fine, but ultimately, purpose, right? And to be able to be purposefully, gainfully utilizing time and energy in this period, and recognizing that, what I'm trying to do every day is making a little bit of difference in the world today. Is deeply satisfying. And that's kind of what's kept me going and what I value the most in this journey.
I cannot agree more. Absolutely. Just I always feel that just to be relevant to anyone outside of your family and your immediate circle of influence is truly a gift, right? And certainly, you know, I have that similar sense of gratitude that, you know, we're in a business through which we can actually impact people's lives right now in whatever small measures that we can, even if it's for positivity for a week, right? Or helping them learn and expand their minds through something which keeps them positively engaged. So I completely understand that. Does your practice of gratitude have a ritual? Do you write it down, or is it just you're just right now just this whole sentiment of gratitude that's flowing through the way that you're thinking, or do you actually sit down and write something?
Well, I try and at dinner every day, I sit down and with my daughter and my mom and all, and sort of say, okay, what is the best thing that happened today, and you know what did you, you know, what were your feelings today? And so there's a bit of that, but no, mostly mostly all of these are exercises in the context of my 7-year-old and my conversations. Sometimes we write, sometimes we draw. Sometimes we just talk about it at dinner, but that's about it. I think the one thing that does get missed though is people's ability to self-care, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people who see themselves as having some relevant role outside tend to forget about their own self. And I think what's most important is to put the oxygen mask on ourselves first. That's another reason that gratitude really helps, because it's very nurturing to your own soul. And that's really important, because you can't be relevant outside if you haven't taken care of yourself, and you know, you haven't sort of addressed your own needs, whether they're mental needs or physical needs or whatever it is. So I think there's no guilt. There should be no guilt or you know, feeling that people shouldn't take care of themselves. It's that needs to happen just as much as doing anything on the outside.
Absolutely. So how do you recharge? And this is really my last question, because I feel like you and I can keep talking can keep going on, because it's just so much fun to have this conversation with you. But what are you doing to recharge yourself? What is your self-care routine that really works for you at this point?
So guilty as charged for the most part, with all that conversation, but I try. And so the one new thing that I've done, you know, I ran an art fair for 10 years, but I never picked up a brush or I never tried to draw. And I really don't think I could, I really didn't think I could, and I still think I can't, but I do it. I do it every day with my daughter, and that's been amazing. It's very therapeutic. And the other thing that, that I have never done, really is, iron clothes, you know, so these are two things that sort of keep my phone away from me, and just sort of, you know, because I do meditate and I want to be able to have more time to internalize. So these are two things that have helped me, which I don't know if I'll have the opportunity to do once the lockdown lifts.
And ironing clothes is actually a really therapeutic, sort of very calming exercise, right?
Yeah, exactly. So those are my two daily go-to plans.
Well, there's an art therapy idea. I think hundreds of people must have told you this, that I think your two passions can certainly come together as well. And I'm sure that, you know, we'll hear you come up with something like that in a few years as well. It was wonderful. And thank you very much. And thank you for coming to Lockdown Leadership.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot, Shasi.
If you like this episode, you may also like our episode on Black Swan events, where our guests recount their experiences of the Iranian Revolution, the 2008 financial crisis, 9/11, and an autoimmune disease. They share all the wisdom and coping strategies that came out of experiencing these. Tune in to our other podcast, Habits Matter. Lockdown Leadership is a show brought to you by a small and currently remote team at Harappa Education. Thank you to my crisis task force of Nishant Singh, Soumya Bahuguna, Suman Kaur, and Madhavan Bhattacharji for managing, scripting, designing, and producing the show. You can subscribe to Lockdown Leadership on your favorite podcast channels, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow Harappa Education. We're on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Until things get better, stay home, stay safe, and please do make it a habit of washing your hands.